It is a center for higher learning.
It is a place with centuries of secrets in its shadowed halls.
This is where you have come to learn the mysteries of the cosmos.
Welcome to the Miskatonic University Podcast.
They'll teach you things you can't unlearn.
Hello, and welcome to the Miskatonic University Podcast, episode 143. This is the podcast dedicated to Call of Cthulhu and other horror and Lovecraft-related role-playing games. I'm Keeper Dan.
I'm Keeper John, and in this episode, we have a topic discussion from Uncle Tim about how to use law enforcement without disrupting the flow of your game.
I'm Keeper Murph, and we're all four on the show again. Small miracles.
And I'm Keeper Chad, and you're all under arrest for writing some crappy copy in the show notes for me to read about Dallas that I won't read, so...
Miskatonic University Campus Crier.
The Campus Crier is Miskatonic U student paper. Here's where we go through Mythos-related news and feedback for the show. This episode is being recorded on April 12th, 2018.
A new 12-page Delta Green scenario by Dennis Detwiller called Sweetness is available now via DriveThruRPG in both PDF and print on demand. The blurb is, the Bernier family of Tampa, Florida, has been terrorized by fire and weird graffiti. Police suspect a hate crime. The mark on the door, carved with a horn or a claw and smeared with blood and what the heck?
Effluvia.
Nice.
Effluvia.
Uvula.
No.
Makes, no, not uvula.
Nope.
Effluvia.
I think it basically is guts and poop.
Oh, okay. That was sanity inducing right there, I'll tell you.
It was.
Makes Delta Green think otherwise. One of the experts says it's the symbol of Kor, queen of the underworld, goddess of an ancient mystery cult. This actually sounds pretty awesome.
It does.
It does sound pretty good. A new Rules Light Lovecraftian-style role-playing game from Les Livres de Lyon? No.
Are they landmines in why? Each one of these ones?
I hope so. I hope so.
My question is, why am I reading the one with the French names in it when freaking Chad speaks French? Please say the name of that, Chad.
Les Livres de Lyon.
Thank you. Is available on DriveThruRPG. The makers say the system was inspired by Advanced Fighting Fantasy, Traveler, and others. This version is 34 pages and art-free at a pay-what-you-want price. A promo copy says, so grab a character sheet, 2d6, pick a profession and a reputation, and go fight the old ones or die screaming. The money made by this version will pay for the art of the final version. And there is a link in the show notes as well. I've already downloaded this, by the way.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's actually looks pretty good.
That's a cool way of covering the costs, too.
I agree. Interesting model to pay for the art that way.
Very.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Sirenscape and Chaosium have announced a new partnership to release official sounds for the Call of Cthulhu RPG. Sirenscape's an app that creates movie-like immersive sound for tabletop games. We have a link in the show notes, and I think it's very interesting to just imagine what an official sound could possibly mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suspect we'll probably get maybe a couple of Sirenscape things that are tuned to specific scenarios.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would expect the new masks to be one of them, because Chaosium seems to be doubling down on the hoopla for masks.
I'm picturing a lot of wet slaps and, yeah.
And effluvia.
Effluvia of sounds. A uvula. That too, actually, might work out.
This is actually, they are doing masks for sure in that release.
Okay.
That's going to be one of their first things.
And we talked to him, didn't we? Interview him like way back in early days?
We might have.
I don't remember anything.
No, yeah. Been forever. There's a Kickstarter that I've gotten in on for Call of Cthulhu leather campaign journals. So these are empty journals that you write in with a nice leather cover, and there are different embossings on the outside to choose from. And also inside has certain pages with content, you know, drawings and notes based on the theme of the cover. They have a mythos, flora, and fauna, and so it'll have, like, artist notes of various mythos creatures in there. And there's a Mountains of Madness Miskatonic Expedition. That one actually is the one I'm kind of leaning towards. And yeah, they've got two others that are based on stories. They've got one based on the Call of Cthulhu. I believe that's got the Miskatonic University symbol. And then there's one that's based on the Dunwich Horror that has kind of a cultish symbol on it.
They look amazing. I saw this the other day, and yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, I decided to get one of these, so I'm thinking probably the Arctic Expedition. I really like that one.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I might get the flora and fauna one.
Yeah.
Think about that.
I think it's already funded. This thing funded in like 24 hours, and I think you can get an actual journal for like $55 Australian. Not really sure what that is in real money, but you know.
Real. Yeah. Oh, nice. That's good.
Well, I pledged.
Sorry, Australia.
Oh, I got the early bird. So yeah, I did an early bird, 50 Australian, which is $39 American.
Oh, wow. That's not bad at all.
Not bad at all.
I like Australian.
And it's going to come with HPLA chess props in there now, because that was the first stretch goal.
Oh, wow. Sweet. See, now I think I'm going to have to back this.
And a coin.
How much more time is on this?
It currently has a timer recording 14 days to go.
Oh, that's awesome.
Not so much for listeners, because I think that means... Oh, no, I think you are in. So you'll have a few days left.
Yeah,
a few days.
Hopefully you'll have a little bit of time. So take a look. I'm also going to be sharing this out on the social media stuff again and make sure that it stays in front of people, because this is neat. And it's not that expensive. It's decent rates. And another stretch goal is that they're going to have one themed based on masks.
Yeah.
Neat. A new edition of Alone Against the Dark, Defying the Triumph of the Ice, is out now from Chaosium. It's been revised and updated to 7th edition and is by Matt Costello. Again, for those who aren't in the know, these Alone Against books is... they're choose your own adventure books, so it's solo play. And I love these things. I've got the original one of the Alone Against the Dark. I'm definitely going to get the new one in print.
Just a quick note. I got in my RPG coaster. It was the Cthulhu version, and it is flipping awesome. There is a picture of it in the show notes, so you guys can see it. The picture's not that great. It's a cell phone picture. It's actually a lot darker than what it looks there. But it is fantastic, and my name came out perfect. And one thing you can't tell is the eyes in Cthulhu's face are so deep that they make pinholes all the way through to the back. So when you hold it up to the light, it looks like his eyes are glowing.
My gosh, that is awesome.
It's really, really cool.
What is that made of? Is that leather? Is that wood? What is that?
You can choose what kind you wanted, and I chose walnut. So that's a walnut. Nice. Yeah, it's solid walnut with a nice felt ring on the bottom to keep it from scratching.
It's beautiful.
It really is. It's fantastic. I really, really enjoy it.
I need one of those. That is gorgeous.
I'd consider drilling a hole right through there and putting a little leather cord on it, wearing it.
Mm.
Right?
Make a pendant out of it.
It's
like
a little badge.
Big old medallion.
It's cool. The words around the outside edge as well. It's actually the famous phrase that Chad is the only one that can actually say, but it looks like it's runes, but it's really not.
Oh, it says Fungalum and Gluenaf Wargan and Glafadakan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
You see that? Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
And you can add your own
make
name.
It out now.
Originally it has Cthulhu under Cthulhu. But I had him put in Keeper Murph and it came out looking spot on, man.
Oh, yeah.
It does. It's very well centered. I love it.
Looks really good.
Michael O'Brien from Chaosium has announced the launch of the Miskatonic University, the Restricted Collection Kickstarter that we talked about, I think, at least last episode. When I say we, I mean people other than me. The date has been set. It is April 17th, which is in 5 days and will have passed by the time this airs. And they say they're excited to be launching their first Lovecraftian board game since 1987. Points to anyone who can name that board game? Not a hard one.
We named it last time.
Oh, damn. Well, whatever.
Did we?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I don't remember.
What
was it though, Chad? Just so you don't have to lose.
Arkham
all.
Horror. It's Arkham Horror. I knew it before you
guys. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we knew that.
I figured it was something more obscure than that. Okay. I am super excited for this. I predict by the time this episode airs, which is after the Kickstarter has begun, this thing will have already funded.
Yeah, most likely.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that seems like pretty safe.
And they'll be knocking out stretch goals. I am totally down for this new game.
And last but not less important, a big thank you to Edwin for editing this episode once again. Thanks, man, for being in the volunteer rotation, and you guys have been doing a great job.
Thank you.
Thank you, Edwin.
And we're sorry.
Yes. Is there a word that means thank you and sorry at the same time? We need to find that.
I think it's just Murph. And you translate Murph's name just means thank you and sorry. That's all it is.
He knows me way too well.
And we've got some audio segments. We love these. First up, strap yourselves into the Wayback Machine, Sherman. We're on our way back to ancient Rome for a tale from Oscarius Tabularis about the worst dinner party ever.
Salve, citizens. I am Oscarius Tabularis, and this is Glimpses into the Empire. The hearts of men are as varied as the shells upon a seashore. Some shine with color, some are jagged and broken, while still others are dull and unspectacular. Every once in a while you'll come across a shell as black as a moonless night sky. And such was the heart of Vettius Pullio. Vettius Pullio was a freedman, meaning he had been born a slave, but was now free. Good fortune smiled upon him, and he had amassed a considerable fortune through commerce. Vettius earned his way into the ranks of the noble equestrians due to his wealth. One would think that so lucky a man would be generous and good-natured. One might also expect that such a man would own few slaves, as he had been a slave himself, or that if he did own slaves, he would treat them very well. Sadly, the truth is quite the opposite. Vettius owned many slaves, and he became famous far and wide for his sadistic cruelty towards them. Another thing Vettius was famous for was his fondness for eating Murania, those long, slimy, blood-sucking, eel-like fish, which I think you people call lampreys. Many consider them a delicacy, but I can't stand the thought of the disgusting things. Vettius had a massive pool constructed at his villa, where he raised lampreys for his kitchen. But I think the main reason he kept the pool was to terrorize his slaves. You see, when a slave displeased him, Vettius would have them thrown to the lampreys. The voracious creatures would swarm, latching onto the screaming slave, feeding, draining them with blood. The victims would weaken as they were being eaten alive, until they were no longer able to tread water and drowned. This happened so often that many of the lampreys grew to incredible size, fattened on human blood, and Vettius took great pleasure in devouring the lampreys who had eaten those who had displeased him. Somehow, such a despicable person also happened to be the friend of Divine Augustus, our first emperor. One day Augustus was dining at the home of Vettius Pullio, and it was a grand affair. All the best finery the household had to offer was on full display, when suddenly a slave boy who'd been serving accidentally broke a goblet of fine crystal. Vettius, as was his nature, flew into a rage and ordered the slave boy thrown to the lampreys. The hysterical child wriggled out of the grasp of his captors and threw himself at the feet of Divine Augustus, and he begged. He did not beg for his life, oh no, he was not that proud. The slave begged to be killed cleanly, with mercy, and not to be devoured alive by the blood-sucking horrors in his master's pool. Augustus was shocked, and he'd seen enough. He ordered the boy immediately freed from slavery, and that he not be punished. The emperor then ordered that every item of fine crystal in the entire household be shattered, and all the broken shards thrown into the lamprey pool. And when that was done, he ordered that the loathsome pool be filled in. The emperor then chastised Vettius, saying a man's life should not be given up to unheard-of tortures over a broken cup, and that he must think quite a great deal of himself to act this way in front of his emperor. Many years later, as all men, good and bad, eventually do, Vettius died as one of the most hated men in the Empire. In his will, he left much land to Augustus, with many grand buildings upon them, with instructions for the properties to be used for the public good. Augustus gladly accepted the land, but tore down every structure upon it, so that there would be no monuments to remember the name of Vettius Pullio. Today, his name is only remembered for the cruelty of his deeds, and how he was put in his place by the divine Augustus. So never forget, in the end, you will not be remembered for your wealth or your property, but by how well you treated your fellow human beings, especially those you held power over. So until next time, yours, in service to the Empire, Ascarius Tabularis.
Wow, holy, that is a great story.
That was really good.
Gross.
And so many great implications and hooks for Call of Cthulhu.
Oh, what an awesome villain, right? Totally.
Wow.
Be a great campaign villain.
It sounds like that guy had a little bit of something else in his blood.
Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Totally.
That's how a Roman Deep One Hybrid plays it.
Right. He's got an affinity for certain pets.
Yeah. And he likes the seafood.
Mm. Man, that was good.
I mean, tasty.
Mm-hmm. Lamprey. Human-flavored lamprey.
God, I love it. It is a delicacy. Now get your paper footballs ready to snap through the goalposts of ennui as we settle into Mr. Tyler's detention hall for some more thoughts on a mythos minion we've covered here only recently.
Quiet down. You're all here in detention with me today because you were caught snorting the powder of Ibn Ghazi in the restroom. I don't know what unseen thing you are trying to make visible, but that is not allowed. Now, I don't want to be here any more than you do, so we're going to talk about whatever I want to talk about. And today, I want to question something that's bothered me for a long time. The depiction of dimensional shamblers. We all know what they look like, right? Very wrinkly skin, insect-like head, shuffling on two legs, humanoid form, able to pop in and out of existence. But I don't think that description is necessarily accurate. That is how the dimensional shambler is described in its first appearance in The Horror in the Museum. Sort of. In Horror in the Museum, a collaboration between H.P. Lovecraft and Hazel Heald, we don't actually see a dimensional shambler. Here's the description. Shuffling toward him in the darkness was the gigantic, blasphemous form of a black thing not wholly ape and not wholly insect. Its hide hung loosely on its frame, and its rugose, dead-eyed rudiment of a head swayed drunkenly from side to side. Its forepaws were extended with talons spread wide, and its whole body was taut with murderous malignity despite its utter lack of facial expression. It's a great description, but this isn't the description of a dimensional shambler. Actual shamblers never show up in this story. It's the description of a crazy museum owner wearing the skin of a dimensional shambler, or rather what he describes as a dimensional shambler. Did I mention the crazy part? So, the rugose or wrinkled skin, the ill-fitting skin, the dead-eyed head drunkenly waving from side to side, the fact that it's a humanoid could just be because it's a man in a dimensional shambler costume. This description could have as much in common with an actual dimensional shambler as a man with a bear pelt draped over his shoulders has to an actual bear. The only parts of this description that have anything to do with the dimensional shambler are the fact that it's black, not wholly insect, and possesses talons. And I guess it has skin. Now, I'm aware I'm being pedantic, but I'm not just being pedantic here. This is, I think, an important reminder of the freedom we have to change up our monsters in Call of Cthulhu. Of how much we assume we know about these monsters, and yet we really don't know that much about them at all. We've had the stats for Mego and Shoggoths for decades, but you can make them whatever you want them to be for your games. After all, the Dark Young of Shub-Niggurath was a Shoggoth in its original first story. Despite the necessary categorization for role-playing games, we can never correlate the contents of a Lovecraftian universe completely, leaving us a lot of freedom as keepers of arcane lore. There's always another layer of horror to dig out. Well, that's it for this detention. Stay out of trouble.
Love it.
Holy crap, that was a Scooby-Doo moment. I never...
I know.
Wow.
Right. Mr. Museum Owner.
You pesky kids.
That's right.
Jinkies.
I like that. Man, that's a hook. You know, people dressed up in various mythos creatures that were slain, maybe handed down from generation to generation, like a...
Yeah.
What would a, you know, an elder thing skin look like? And people could use them as part of cults, you know, costumes and rituals even.
Yeah. Or just some guy has a thing in his house and doesn't even know what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that barrel thing, it's some sort of plant from Africa.
Right.
Maybe he just whips it out.
I got it from my uncle.
Scare the kids at Halloween time.
Yeah, every Kristallnacht, he comes out and gives presents to all the children.
Well, you know, it's Walpurgis soon. You know what that means.
Also, I think I'm going to...
The costume wears you.
I really want to adopt as a catchphrase, I'm not just being pedantic here.
But... you got to have the butt.
Thank you so much for pointing that out, Mr. Tyler.
Yeah, good one.
That was a really good one.
Good catch.
Yeah,
yes,
for sure. If you want to read more about Mr. Tyler, check out Skullduggery in the Smoke. And there's a link in the show notes.
And not to worry, Jonathan is sitting out an episode, but plans to come back later with another episode about folkloric oddities in Japan. And again, if you have any ideas for segments that you want to run by us, we're playing the long game here, and we would love to get some segments in the bank. So contact us.
Yeah. Either a one-off or repeat segment, whatever you want to do.
And that number's on the screen, but Murph, could you read it for us?
That's mup-podcast.com.
Is it? No, it's really not. That's mup.feedback@gmail.com. That's mup.feedback@gmail.com.
It's time for your next lesson.
And this was sent in by our good buddy Tim. Murph, go ahead and play his... recorded intro to this idea.
Sure.
Hello, Miskatonic University Podcast. This is Tim McGonigal here, longtime fan of the show and occasional minion for Golden Goblin Press, calling you gents from lovely New York City. I have an idea for a topic regarding the authorities and consequences in the Call of Cthulhu RPG and the role the police and similar types may play in scenarios. When do the police become part of a scenario if a player character crosses an obvious line into blatant illegal activity? As a GM, how do you balance keeping the game realistic and grounded if a character goes overboard with an illegal action and gets busted? How does a keeper not let realistic consequences stymie the game when, say, one or more PCs are picked up by the coppers and are looking at an extended stay at the old Gray Bar Hotel? This topic could also be expanded to authority figures in relationship to a player character's profession and the consequences for them breaking the rules as it relates to their quote-unquote day job when they are doing mythos investigator work. Would love to hear your thoughts on the topic. Keep up the great work, you guys. And, of course, G-O-P-O-D-S. Go Pods!
Thank you, Tim.
That was awesome, Tim.
I love the spelling out. That was awesome.
So, yeah, ways in which police and the authorities could be used in a scenario without breaking it because all of your characters are in cells.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Jail is kind of that's the nuclear option. That's,
mm-hmm.
That is, you're saying it's time to go home. We've taken this as far as we can take it. Ken and Robin just did a whole thing on jailbreaks. So there is room for having, you know, some kind of jailbreak scenario, but that's pretty extreme and kind of a little off tone. Yeah.
I tend to allow them to get into trouble, but in the world that I play in, bribery is very real and very approachable.
Right.
So, sure. Yeah. Like,
corruption's one way. Yeah.
Yeah. Or they have easy access to a lawyer of some sort. Like when we were playing Mass, I think several of my players in New York in Mass were incarcerated. But we had access to an NPC that was a lawyer and more money than we knew what to do with. And so we were able to get them out rather quickly.
You know, this topic really calls for anecdotes, and I have a couple to share if y'all don't mind. Chad is going to be very familiar with.
Oh, that's funny. I was going to bring that up too. Go ahead.
So I had written a one on one kind of one keeper one player scenario, and Chad was playing the game, and so I don't know how much I want to give away as far as the plot and everything, but suffice to say there was a mythos monster.
Fair enough.
In a house.
Yep.
And Chad's investigator, who I can't remember what the occupation was, but he basically was, if I remember right, just a run-of-the-mill guy, you know, so he wasn't trying to play someone with a gun, gung-ho, and all this stuff. He really felt his character would engage with others, you know, for help. So, and it's in a small town out in the middle of nowhere with this, you know, small sheriff's office. So he goes to the sheriff's office and says, "Guys, I need help. There's something going on here. I'm going to wait here." Now, I'm not going to have NPCs win the day, right? It's just not going to happen. So when he sends an NPC to go check out the house that has a mythos monster in it, guess what? That cop isn't coming home. And then they wait a while. The other cop, because there were only two, is starting to get a little antsy. And he says, "Look, for your own protection, I want to put you in this cell." And I kept giving Chad all this time to like refute, say no, let me help. Oh, no, let's go and try something else. Let me come with you, or bribe, or anything. Chad goes, "You know what? That sounds right. For my own protection, I should be in that cell." I'm like, "Okay." Yeah. He just walks right in. Mm. So he shuts the door. You know, the guy shuts the gate, and I'm like, "Okay, well, the deputy's going to leave now." And, of course, the deputy gets eaten. And eventually somebody comes to check on him. They call more cops. They get eaten. It was a thing. And it was just like, "Well, we're just going to end this with you in jail. You get convicted." You know?
Yeah, not my best role-playing choice there. And in fact, like, going to jail is just about my least favorite end game. I don't enjoy that, but there was something about the character trying to engage with the situation that I found really hard to swallow just in my own imagination. So I'm not sure I wasn't really thinking in long term what was going to happen, but I didn't want to go out there alone. I knew that much.
And you know, so again, with some of these other scenarios that I was writing at that time, these one-on-ones, I have another one where the opening hook for the gameplay is that the investigator discovers a person who has just committed suicide. And you find this woman like in the last seconds of her life. Clearly this is going to be a situation that the police, because it's in a public place, it's in a library. And so the police are clearly going to be involved. But I wrote it and engineered it in such a way that because it looks like an open and shut case, oh, this person committed suicide. We have other things that are going on in the city, which actually also ties into the scenario. The cops are like, this was clearly suicide. You didn't do anything. We appreciate you reporting it. Open and shut case. We don't have to investigate it any further. And so I gave the police a concrete reason to not be involved. But there were enough clues that were, you know, it was esoteric enough that the investigator is like, "No, there's something here. And if they're not going to follow it, then I guess I need to." So I kind of tried to set that up so that right at the very beginning, the police are aware of what's going on, and they simply brush it off because they have other bigger fish to fry, which eventually, full circle, the investigator kind of figures all that out as well. But you know, I wanted to engineer it in such a way that you couldn't just go to the cops or have them, you know, partner up with you for the investigation. They clearly just go, "Nope, open and shut, and we're out."
Right. So that's as far as the parallel investigation. But that isn't involving the characters doing something in the game that would, you know, against the law.
Now, I think I had, and this is a common theme I'm realizing with me, I had an NPC that was a police officer in one game, and a player character died, and I let him take over the cop. And so then we had a cop on the inside, which worked well for us to have like a homicide cop or something that would work with us to try and figure out what was going on and whatnot. But having them active on the force at the same time meant that we were able to get out of, or they were able to get out of a lot of different activities. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that is another option, is to have someone already there planted inside of the police so that you don't have to worry about the, you know, the authority issue as much, and hope that they can kind of just get around the fact that, you know, wanton murder is just taking place or something, or whatever it may have been that your characters are up to.
Right. There's preventative things you can do too. One of those things is, I think, a certain social contract agreement. Like, not everyone plays Call of Cthulhu the same way as far as how much police reality there is, how strong law enforcement is in a given setting. And so I think it's not a bad idea if you anticipate this happening, if there's sometimes there's a big kind of neon sign that says, please break and enter this location, right? So if you know that's going to happen and you know that the characters are kind of going to be outside the law, then I think it's good to just have maybe a brief conversation. Maybe you can wait until that comes up. You don't have to say it ahead of time. But all right, in my world, there are consequences. So if you leave witnesses to a crime, that's going to be a problem, and you're going to have to contain it. Well, you know, we can work through that, but, you know, just know I'm playing this kind of for keeps. And the other thing is to just, when they are about to take that action, to just go ahead and foreshadow the consequences and then leave it up to them. But say, all right, well, this is a townhouse and there are neighbors, and if you make a noise, it's possible, I'm just going to tell you now, it's possible that you will be heard and reported. That's just the reality. So shall we continue? Just so that they kind of know that they're not playing a pulp game where there's, or where the reality of the cops, well, you can have real kind of gritty style cops in a pulp game, but you're not playing a cartoon where they can just get away with whatever.
The competence level of the authorities can be kind of a scale.
Right. Yeah.
I think it should also be mentioned the time period you're playing in, though. Mm-hmm. So like your example, even if they in the 20s in the classic setting, if they even were quiet and were able to get away with whatever they did inside said townhouse, the odds of them being caught for that are relatively remote.
No, I don't. Okay. I think that,
I mean, depending on the situation, you know, I mean, unless they were seen, unless they left some sort of blatant clue behind in the 1920s, the odds are against them being caught.
I would disagree. I mean, people have telephones, and if they hear something, they could call the cops.
That's what I just said, though. Barring the fact that they are quiet. If they are quiet and they don't make a lot of noise, and they don't raise any alarms immediately, and they actually get away scot-free from the scene of the crime without being witnessed, then the odds of them being caught are nil in the 20s.
Because that relies purely on forensics.
Right, yeah.
However, if it's a modern-day game, the fact that they did all of that and got away scot-free and no one noticed them just means that no one noticed them right then. Whereas now there's cameras, there's, you know, you could have all sorts of forensic evidence if the crime is bad enough that could be brought into it. So, I mean, there's a whole nother added level of police involvement and how real you really want to get whenever it's a more modern game.
You know, and something else I recently learned, actually from the Secrets of L.A. book, is sometimes certain police departments are just rotten to the core.
Oh, sure.
And I guess this was true in the 20s for Los Angeles, to the point where because certain neighborhoods or certain parts of the city were mob-controlled, the police didn't respond to certain calls or whatever in certain neighborhoods because it was part of mob authority, right? And it wasn't like the cops were afraid to go. It was they were getting compensated to not go, right?
Yeah.
And if there's any kind of, you know, dust up in a certain area, they let the neighborhood watch basically take care of that, you know? And so that could also be a way that you could, you know, have a game where you let your players know ahead of time, hey, the reputation for this area of town is that it's controlled by this other group here. That could actually be worse. I mean, at least the cops are going to theoretically just haul you in, you know, under theory. But who knows what's going to happen if someone who has no, you know, actual authority and doesn't have to really answer to anyone decides to try and intervene and find out what's, you know, why are you making a fuss in their neighborhood, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's common, not just for LA, but I mean, that's common for almost any metropolitan city.
Yes, true. It's just, I only really kind of got that because it was apparently very bad in Los Angeles back then.
Yeah. And that's a dial you can set because there are precincts that are, you'll have like somebody will get elected to crack down even in the 20s. And then that precinct will be super squeaky clean. And, mm-hmm. you know, they'll just throw a lot of police at the issue. And they may even be working with the mob to, you know, to have a high level of law enforcement. So that's something you can decide is how
sure
how far, if you want corruption or if you want a heavy police presence.
Yeah, you can set that dial way the other direction so that any kind of an infraction is addressed.
So those are all kind of ways to skirt the issue, right? That's preventing that from being a question that Tim can ask, but I think he's trying to get at what's the line where it does become a problem. When do you actually start to incorporate the fact that somebody's broken a law and the law enforcement knows about it?
So I had a game a few years ago back when I was working at a place where we were doing Call Cthulhu once a week over lunch. Right, we were running a lunchtime game. And I can't remember the scenario we were playing, but it was 1920s and it was set in New York and or Boston or something. And the investigators had just enough information on a prominent person that they felt it was necessary to go to his residence and try and confront him. They were trying to catch him off guard or something, right? And I guess, you know, I had him to where this guy was living in a high rise building with a doorman and you know, like a lobby, you know, that's staffed. And so, you know, people have to kind of check in and check out to see the residents. So they come in and they're like, yeah, we want to go see, you know, Mr. X or whatever. And he's like, he's not in. Of course, the investigators had staked it out. They knew he was in. And so, you know, they're like, no, you're lying. We're going to go up and see him. I'm afraid, you know, you can't do that. You know, this is a private place. And then one of my players doesn't tell anybody this. This wasn't part of the plan going in. He just decides to go rogue. He goes, I take my gun out and I shoot it into the ceiling. I was like, what? He goes, I take my gun out and the table is just in an uproar. Why? No, don't do that. He goes, no, it'll be fine. I'm just going to scare him. I take my gun out. I shoot it into the ceiling. I'm like, okay, he's scared. He ducks under. He says, go. And he tells you what floor it is or whatever. You know, this guy doesn't want to die for his job. You know, he tells you where to go. And they just go and just leave this guy cowering behind the counter. So, you know, the other players are like, man, he's going to call the cops. And the player's like, eh, we'll be in and out before anything. The cops won't get here. So I was going to be lenient. I figured, all right, I'll have the cops be a little bit, you know, overworked or whatever. Maybe they don't believe this guy. I don't know. They're not going to show up yet. They have a whole kit and caboodle up in the apartment. They confront the guy. They capture him. They, you know, basically, you know, mock up some handcuffs. They bring him back down to the lobby and they're going to leave with him again. And I forget why, but they stopped in the lobby again. And the player goes, I shoot into the ceiling again. I'm like, why are you shooting into the ceiling? Okay. And so this guy, he's just going, you know, John Wayne and everything. And the other player's like, we're leaving him. And so they grab their captive and they run for the cars. And the John Wayne guy for whatever reason, stayed behind, and I did jail him. I was like, I'm kind of done with you.
Yeah.
And I think that player, actually, I think we just kind of phased him out. The player, we just phased him out, and we let the other players keep going. But, I mean, I was willing to just let it keep going and going and going, but this guy was basically double dog daring me, right?
Yeah. I think that's when somebody's intentionally being disruptive and you've already fired warning shots, so to speak, in the sense that you've kind of indicated that the law is aware of them, but there could be consequences in the future and they're still doing it. Then, you know, sometimes you just gotta either deal with that, like during a water break, I'm thinking in a convention. All right, let's take five guys, you know, and maybe take them aside and say, what's going on? You know, what are you trying to do there? Because I think that some people enjoy that. They enjoy just being disruptive, and that's a deal breaker. Like, I think you just have to kind of deal with that.
Yeah.
I think I'm trying to rack my brains for ways you could wrap around this. And one thing that came to mind was the movie Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets in a lot of trouble in Chinatown.
Yeah, well, it's Chinatown.
In the movie itself. Well, yeah, of course. But, I mean, he's constantly getting arrested. I mean, I think he gets pulled in like maybe three or four times by the cops. But each time he's let go within a matter of hours, either because of his connections or because someone posts his bond. And that's the other thing. As long as you've not done something absolutely horrendous, and depending on the time period, you might be able to get bailed out relatively quickly. I mean, maybe within 24 to 48 hours, depending. But not so much of a space that if it's not, at least if it's not a time-based game, you might still be able to add them into the game by just, you know, glossing over the time where they're missed. While we spend the next 24 hours trying to get the money together in order to get Paco out of jail or whatever. You know what I mean? But that's another option is to take a hard look at it, especially in the 20s, you know, the realities of bail and bond were much more lenient and available than they are now.
Yeah, depending on the severity of the crime, you're not going to... Yeah.
Right, exactly. I'm not saying if you've murdered someone, but, you know, for breaking and entering, stuff like that, you could probably get bonded out rather quickly.
Yeah.
The other thing I thought of was instead of how to worry about this whole law enforcement issue, what if it was just a straight... like law enforcement game of sorts. So what if it was like a Mythos version of Serpico where, yeah, you're playing law enforcement, but at the same time, you've got this whole undercurrent of corruption that's happening. And so you've got to watch your back, you know, Serpico with Mythos. I think that'd be kind of fun to do as well.
That does sound fun.
Yeah. There's a bunch of different scenarios where you play criminals too.
Right.
So in that case, you're going to, you know, law enforcement's going to be part of the threat.
And I think in some of those games, at least, the idea is more to save the conflict with the police until the very end so that it's either a do or die situation. You know, when you're playing criminal classes, or not all of them, but in some of those games, that's the case. You try and delay as much interaction with the police as you can. And that is something you could do in a normal game, is remind the players that, okay, well, you got about, you know, there's a few minutes before the sirens, or you can hear the sirens off in the distance now, and just give them time to actually get themselves out of there before any police actually arrive on the scene.
Mm. Yeah, I like until you reach the point where it just feels like, oh, this player's just trying to wind me up and they're here to be disruptive. Before you get to that point, that conclusion, there are all kinds of things you can do that are consequences that make the PC's lives harder, but are not jail, right? So you can have, you know, sort of mild responses where the heat gets turned up, where the police show up and question and release, or you can have them go and talk to an NPC that you care about, either one of those connections that you write on your character sheet, if it's local enough and makes sense, or somebody you've talked to already, that, you know, you're putting heat on someone else. Or like maybe they go and they, you've talked to people, you know, who don't have much power. Say you have a contact in the jungle, a hobo jungle down by the river, and they go and toss people who you care about. That's another way to sort of turn up the volume and have consequences. It's like, oh God, you know, now we have to defend them. I don't know. Can you think of other sort of non-jail consequences that are real but are interesting, make the story drive forward?
I mean, you could also give them the ever-present tail.
Yep.
You know, and always have, well, they're always looking over their shoulder at that point, you know, randomly just start calling out spot hidden roles or something of that nature to see if they can catch this one particular car that always seems to be on the corner behind them.
Yeah.
And then they can, and then they can't catch it, of course. You know, that's the thing. Well, they notice it, but then it disappears. So that you always keep it up and that there's always somebody there. And then they're not real sure if it's the cops or if it's, well, maybe it's because of that. The break-in we did a couple of days ago, but maybe it's actually the cult that we're after. Who the heck really knows?
Well, and, you know, depending upon the scenario, you know, if your assumption is that the investigators are attempting to follow a clue trail, but maybe they're kind of noisy about it, and they're doing stuff that's gaining the attention not only of the quote-unquote bad guys that they're trying to thwart or whatever, but also of the authorities. And so you start introducing elements where, you know, maybe the authorities are coming to sniff around, or maybe it looks like the authorities are going to, you know, try and come in and maybe pick up the investigators for questioning. But then suddenly, and especially if the investigators are able to witness it or see evidence of it, as the authorities are coming into the narrative due to the results of what the investigators are doing, not just because it was part of the narrative already, you know, to have a police come in, the bad guys take out the cops.
Mm.
So now the investigators are still free to go, but now they've got, I mean, that would be a sand loss because now due to their direct actions, the authorities have lost their lives or been captured and will be next on the, you know, sacrificial block or something, because, you know, whereas the investigators are maybe trying to do what they can to protect themselves, I would assume, or something, the cops are just kind of waltzing in. They're like, we, you know, hey, we have authority here. And then the bad guys go, no, you don't. And then they just take them out, you mm-hmm. know. So that should weigh on the players that you did this. You made the noise.
Yeah.
The authorities came to investigate or to question you, and now the bad guys took them out, and that wouldn't have happened if you had just kept a lower profile.
Yeah, that's, I like that. I was thinking that in a similar vein in the bailing situation, like what if a known suspicious character ends up bailing you out? What if the cultists are sort of caretaking you? Like they're, you know, or they're getting you out of trouble, or they're paying the bribe, and now they have this over you, you know?
Mm. Mm. Oh, that's good too. I like that.
What if it's a setup and you were led into that townhouse on purpose so that they could bail you out and gain right. you? I mean, just a classic mm-hmm. term. Yeah.
You know, if they're aware that you're in on what the mythos is and stuff, they very well might look to recruit someone like that. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, well, we don't even have to indoctrinate them in what's going on. Let's see if we can get them to, you know.
Yeah, he's just crazy enough to believe
it. Yeah, there's a really good scenario that I won't name that has a character who will give diseases to PCs and then offer a cure, which is, you know, mythos informed. So yeah, like, you know, that's another thing is blackmail, and it could be the police. I mean, if you want to go mm-hmm. the corruption way, it could be the police show up to a B&E where you rolled a 00 on your stealth roll and caught the attention. And so they show up and, they offer a little deal, you know, mm-hmm. We're watching you, we know where you live, and they could extort some money.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could just place it in the 70s in or the 60s in New York City and you'd be golden.
Sure.
Well, whenever Chad mentioned that with, fail to roll, I'm like, maybe not necessarily on a fail, but on a push fail.
Well, that's the thing, right?
Yeah.
That's where the cops always pop up.
Yeah. You know, I did a text search.
It's almost a button.
Totally. I did a text search because I thought maybe there'd be some guidance on this in 7th edition or 6th edition. And I did a police, a word search for police, and I didn't find anything. But I did find a whole bunch of references to police and the authorities for failed push rolls. Because you know how each of the skills has a little suggestion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, many, many of them suggest that the police show up, which is actually making the problem of this podcast topic worse, right? Like, it's suggesting the police are, could get involved. It's quite likely.
I was thinking also, depending upon the scenario, so clearly this wouldn't work with everything, but if you had a majority or even all of your investigators incarcerated, bring the mythos to them. You know, have something disrupt, crash into the building, something, the cultists, something, and cause a ruckus and a mass escape. And the police, depending upon what the investigators were hauled in for, if it's a big enough ruckus, like a Terminator walking through killing all the cops, I think they're gonna not sweat the small stuff because a few eggheads escaped from the little cell that they were in,
the opposite as well. Well, not the opposite, but to take that one further, kill the player in the jail cell. No one else gets harmed, but then the cops go in there to check and, hey, look, there's finger paint all over the place. No, that's not finger paint. You know what I mean? And just completely obliterate one of those characters and say, hey, man, you got caught, and then hand it back over and they can play a backup.
Mm-hmm.
I know that might sound like the nuclear option, but I mean, this is Call of Cthulhu. People, player characters die all the time. So, I mean, it's not that far out of the realm to say, okay, you got caught. They caught up with you and now you're done. Sorry. Mm-hmm. And they got no choice about it. They're locked in a steel cage.
Now you pick one of the cops to play.
Or a concrete box.
Right.
Yeah. Now you get to be another or some other. That's usually what I would do is I would pick up one of the NPCs that we've already seen.
Yeah.
Either the guy who booked them or, somebody else, the guy who found them probably would be the best because he's already hit with a nice little sand.
Mm-hmm.
And then get them. Maybe that cop just witnessed whatever it was that disappearing that murdered your last character.
Exactly. The same sort of scenario you would see out of a late 80s, 90s monster movie where,
right.
The disbelieving cop sees the monster and is now on board with the other cop that was thought to be crazy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, you could take it the other way. Another horror trope is when... You were just talking about this, that, basically the mythos destroys the authority figure. That is a horror trope, right? Like when somebody's jailed, you wake up the next morning and all the cops are on the ground without heads. What's next? Then you have a whole, have a little scene where they have to find a key.
And your door is unlocked.
Yeah. Sure, it could be. Yeah, exactly.
The lock is smoking and the door is swinging ajar.
Yeah, this has happened in like the Green Mile maybe does this, or there's some jail horror movies where this has happened that I can't think of the name of, but that's scary, right? That's like if they have control over authorities.
I mean, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think his last suggestion was to expanding that out to authority figures in relation to a player's player character's profession.
Mm-hmm.
I, for some reason, I keep thinking of like an office space scenario where you're an office worker and you keep having to, file these reports that you keep getting late on because, I know I'm late. I'm sorry, but, I can't tell you what I was doing, but I mean, it was important, but and just kind of up the ante every single time. It might be easier to think of it that way as opposed to just straight up police.
Sure. Or at school principal, like you have in Buffy.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, you have all kinds of different authority figures. It could be military. Or it could, you know, I was thinking the Beyond the Mountains of Madness doesn't have police, so this doesn't apply. But in fact, there's maritime law. There's, you know, the captain. There's right. Yeah, captain. There's an authority structure there. And yeah. You can do things that are afoul of those rules. So,
yep, absolutely.
I don't think we've really zeroed in on what's the threshold. Like, what's your personal... Is it just... I mean, for me, I guess it's disruption. If I really get a sense that somebody is doing it on purpose, or I've given them a warning shot and they still violate. But, like, what do you guys... I mean, Dan, we were dancing around this, and we've talked about it in other podcasts, but there was the... I hope this is a safe example, because all of the role players involved are here. Well, not all of them. God, who were we role-playing with? Who was the other character? You guys know what I'm talking about.
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Bomb in a hospital.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, that had Hugh involved, too.
It was Hugh. That's right.
It was Hugh.
You sort of dealt with...
That had security for the hospital. There wasn't time for the cops to actually show up yet.
Right, it didn't escalate. You didn't take it to the nuclear option there.
Yeah. But that's because you guys didn't stick around. If it had become a turtling scenario, then oh yeah.
Well, it was a package bomb. It's not meant to be sat and watched,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I guess we should recap because
yeah,
it's been years. Yeah,
it has been years, yeah. So essentially I was playing an anarchist.
No.
What are the odds? A violent anarchist, by the way.
Double no.
Who had a penchant for blowing things up. And for some reason, maybe you guys can fill me in why, but I decided to blow up the hospital.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say it wasn't a strong reason.
Yeah, it wasn't actually a real bomb even.
You
brought in a sack with unknown stuff in it, saying it was a bomb as a distraction so other people could look at some files in a cabinet.
That's exactly what it was, now that you say it. Yeah. So it was just a bluff.
Uh-huh. That terrified a whole lot of people, and there was...
It did, however, get the job done, for the record.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I'm the other way. If the player character wants to go that route, and maybe this is because of my implied social contract when I'm playing, as Chad mentioned before, but if a player character wants to go the route to where they're probably going to get caught, I'm probably going to let them, and then we'll just veer off. Cause I kind of like it whenever it takes a different turn from what I had planned, and I have to kind of think on my feet to work around a situation. I kind of enjoy that about GMing.
Yeah,
so.
Me too.
Well, so what would you have done in that situation, Murph?
Oh, it would have incarcerated me.
It would have been like a dead end, ultimately.
No, not at all. No, it wouldn't have been a dead end. That's the thing. Like, in the scenario we just gave, where me as a player brought in the dummy bomb, it would have been a bomb threat. But it was also the time period, you got to remember. I probably would have been held for... maybe a day or two and then release.
Ooh, I don't know, man, given the galleonist threat and the bombs in New York.
That's true. I forgot
about
that.
I think you'd end up Sacco Vanzetti.
I might have been hung unceremoniously, but I think I might have been able that might be a dead end for that character, now that I think about it. It would have been interesting. Mm-hmm. Or at least I might have brought the police into a more active role. Just to add pressure like we described earlier.
Yeah. And one thing that I wanted to point out that was kind of at the back of my mind while you guys were talking, I dug it up. There is a published scenario from 1993 in which the player characters are on trial for murder.
Oh, yeah. I know what it is.
Yeah.
From Arkham...
Adventures in Arkham Country.
Yeah. Yep.
And I remember running it. I remember we had a lot of fun with it. I barely remember anything else, but I know that it's there. And I dug that up. Unfortunately, that book is not available from Drive-Thru RPG by Chaosium. So,
I know. Yeah. I looked, and I have a link actually to it because I was also going to mention it. That on Amazon, and it's like $47.
Mm.
So, wow.
That's not too terrible, but it's still an awful lot for.
Yeah, I.
Well, for an old school Chaosium book that's not hardbound and it's paperback, you know, I mean, that's a good
one. I don't know. I might save my pennies.
But yeah, that's a good one. That's got a lot of scenarios. I think I've run everything in there.
Nice. It's a classic for sure. Yeah. I never owned it.
I want it back. I don't know what happened to it, but I need that back.
Yep. There's in the King of Chicago Secrets of Marseille book. Pages 58 to 61, there's an excellent section on black market items, on gray market, on how to handle bribery, because that whole thing is crime-based. That's why Marseille and Chicago are in the same book, is because they're both kind of crime syndicate-owned cities at the time. And it's got some good, you know, for bribery and that kind of thing. Also, there's The Crazy Block, where you play a group of criminally insane investigators, which I think I want to run with Murph, who are incarcerated. And it's from the
old... You're just typecasting now.
I know.
He's not wrong. All right. You know what I mean?
That's from Toying with Humans, and it's available on PDF on Chaosium. There's The Eyes Between Worlds from Strange Tales of Dread and Wonder. Players take on roles of Chinese triads who have ended up in the kingdom of Bhutan. Bhutan. Also available. Escape from Innsmouth is a really good sort of dealing with authorities book.
That is a good one, yeah.
Malice Aforethought. That's the... Or did you not want to mention
that's
the name
of the scenario?
Yeah.
Well, it sounded like you were trying to kind of sidestep it, so I didn't bother mentioning the name of the scenario. But yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And, there was,
I haven't read that. I want to read that now. I'm kind of curious to see how they structure that with a trial.
There were actually some roles and modifiers for, jury responses and stuff. I remember that much, but it was very clever and everyone had a good time with it. It's kind of like when you run the auction, how there's actually rules for how the auction plays out.
Mm.
They did a similar thing with the trial.
Nice.
That's cool.
Yeah, I wish I could get my hands on that book again. I can only remember enough that it was clever in how it was done there. And I think that particular scenario was written by Jamie Anderson and Andrew Lehman.
Oh, that's right. Ooh. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, the voice of Lovecraftian literature.
Yeah, totally.
Helped write that scenario. It was one of the two writers. So that's cool.
Yeah. Another thing I found searching around, have you ever seen Role Playing Tips? It's an e-zine. I had not. So this is...
It's been a while. It's been around for a bit.
It has. Really. And the website that I'm linking to down there, at least one of the... They obviously had an upgrade at some point, and the article that I'm looking at on law enforcement in modern games, it's not for horror, but it's got some great insight on how to play PCs as police, catching criminals, police process, scale of response, realistic response time. And it talks about how to turn the dial. But anyway, it looks like it's like 2003 style of HTML and tables.
Now that you say that, I want to say some of the stuff from GURPS back in the day had some really good info, because that was almost a simulation game at that point back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. They had some really good information in their criminals book on how to run as criminals and then what to do when caught and stuff of that nature. Also, the infamous GURPS Illuminati book had oodles of crazy in it. But a lot of that also dealt with what to do when caught or when you run afoul of the authorities not in the know and how to get around that and stuff of that nature. That's one book I wish I still had. Lost that one in the flood.
Ugh. Oh, there it is. GURPS Illuminati. $20. Are you kidding me?
Is that it? Have they updated it? Must be a re-release.
Yeah, it must be. Looks like a new cover to me. Paperback, $20.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, I might have to grab that then, because, I mean, GURPS in general has a lot of really good info that you can then take about role-playing in general and apply to wherever you want, whether you enjoy the system
or yeah, not. Yeah, I agree. Even the mechanics, like the advantages and disadvantages, yeah. Are, you can look through those and pick out, and they do have characteristics that you might not have thought to apply to a PC that are, you know what
totally.
I mean?
Yeah. Totally.
The use of law enforcement in Call of Cthulhu has always been kind of one of those things that I've always played it on that scale. I will basically have an incompetence meter for the local authorities. And usually the level on that meter will be determined by the size of the town and the blatantness of the player characters. I try to actually like to have fairly competent law enforcement in the area and just tell the players, you don't want to get caught doing this. But don't be afraid to actually have the story go in that direction if that's where they go with it. Because personally, I think having them be arrested and try and get out of it and all that, that's just part of the story.
Yeah, I say consequences, but ones that are fun.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree. I think instead of a incompetence meter, I use a corruption meter to satisfy the same need, though. There you go.
Bell. Agreed. I try to hold off, bring in the authorities, but if it's blatant, then I go ahead and cave in and do it.
We want to hear from our listeners. We have a lot of different ways you can reach out to us.
For the complete list, check out our show notes. That's where you'll find our email address, which is mup.feedback@gmail.com, as well as our phone number, SpeakPipe link, and our forums.
Find all the links you need to keep in touch at mu-podcast.com/143.
Send us your questions, feedback, and topic ideas, or join a discussion. Record a liner, tell us who you are, and give us a hearty goopods for our home team, the Fighting Cephalopods.
Thanks for joining us for another episode. Class is dismissed.
3 role-playing game is property of Chaosium, Inc. The written works of H.P. Lovecraft are held in the United States public domain. All other works mentioned in this podcast are the property of their respective owners. Original content of this show is copyright of the Miskatonic University Podcast under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license.
It was Hugh!